Yeah, I'm gonna jump in on that one tomorrow. Yeah, they'll do 5 hours of taping, just like, you know, fake edited news by Ted Koppel. Uh-huh. I know their tricks. Now, I'll tell you what, I'd think about it if it's direct to tape and they have to air it all.
What's that? Okay.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume to save on their very own USB drive. It's huge when somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
NASCAR champion Bobby Labonte here with my brother Terry and my nephew Justin. You know, every sport has its essential safety gear.
For racing, we wear helmets, fire retardant suits, and Nomex gloves.
For fishing, waterfowl hunting, and boating, we wear life jackets.
After an intense race, there's nothing more relaxing than bass fishing
or a little duck hunting.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and shut this off, and you're on.
Tell you, on the track or on the water, accidents happen.
And we have tonight's voters forum, and here's Mr. Max Grossman.
And Nowata County, it's a bipartisan forum tonight. We've got a lot of wonderful candidates here today. Martin Garber, Daryl Fincher, Judd Strom, Kevin Stacey, Travis Dunlap, and Michael McFarland as well. H.J. Reed is going to be tonight's moderator. This forum being brought to you by Phillips 66, live broadcast on K1 AM 1400 and FM 93.3. If you do step away from your radio today, we do have the broadcast available on our Facebook page. You can search Bartlesville Radio on Facebook, and you can find a live video broadcast of tonight's forum. Expected to have some good questions here today. It's a full house here, at least in the lower bowl here, at the Bartlesville High Fine Arts Center Auditorium. It's going to be a lot of very important content matter today. Education, obviously, a hot-button issue these days, especially the recent happenings with the teacher walkout a few weeks ago. So very excited to see what these candidates have to say here. We'll throw it back to Dave for a quick ad. We should have the forum coming up here on K1.
Hun, that little fort that you made out of branches, we all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away.
At Phillips 66, we think pride might look a lot like our newly upgraded stations. Okay, that's kind of a clunky metaphor, but we're not in the metaphor business. We're in the gas business. And our performance gas will lift you up like the wings of a giant screaming eagle. Again, not a great metaphor. Anyway, our new station features a clean, new design and LED lighting, making it a mighty stallion of fuel and convenience. Sorry about that. Phillips 66, proud to be here.
Welcome back to Bartlesville High School for this public education forum for House Districts 10 and 11. About ready to get underway here. Excited to hear what these candidates have to say about some very important issues here tonight. We've got Martin Garber, Daryl Fincher, Judd Strom, Kevin Stacey, Michael McFarland, and Travis Dunlap. Remember, the Republican primary will be held on June 26th, so make sure you register to vote. I believe the deadline to register is June 1st, so you have a couple more days here if you want to vote in this upcoming primary election here. And we have H.J. Reed on the stage here as our moderator today. Still just moments away here.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
And
you could find your way to your seats, please. We'll begin the forum this evening. Good evening. My name is H.J. Reed. I'm the manager of state government affairs for Phillips 66 Company, and I'll be your moderator this evening. So welcome to the Bartlesville Public School Education Forum for Oklahoma House Representatives, House District 10, and House District 11. We have all six candidates with us tonight. The four at the far end are for House District 10. The two closest to me will be for House District 11, and they'll introduce themselves in just a moment. The Examiner Enterprise is broadcasting this event live on Facebook Live, and KWON is carrying tonight's event live for all of its listeners. A special thank you tonight go out to the Steering Committee for this event were Superintendent Chuck McCauley, the School Board President Scott Bilger, School Board Member Allison Clark, and School Board Member Nikki Benson, along with the Executive Director of Technology and Communications, Granger Metters, instructors Heather Boyle and Heather Davis, and citizens Dan Droge and Joe Williams. So they helped put the program together tonight. So if you see one of them afterwards, please thank them for their time, their energy, and their effort for putting this together. Other school board members have given their support, along with numerous teachers, parents, and community volunteers. The questions for tonight's forum are from teachers in ISD 30 and the public who are encouraged to submit their questions online. We provided the candidates with general topics of tonight's questions, but they do not know the exact questions themselves. Although a couple tried to bribe me earlier, I was a little nervous. We have lots of questions. We have six participants, so we're going to move quickly. Time will be limited to 2 minutes for their welcome and to respond to each question. There's a timekeeper located right here. You will show them the signs of what those signs look like. The participants will be allowed to finish their sentence but are expected to adhere to the times that we've posted. Are you ready? Are you ready? Well, let's get started. For opening comment, Representative Dunlap, you're up first.
Thank you, H.J., and thank you all for being here. Allow me to introduce my family to you. Of course, you all know my parents. They're sitting here in the middle. And, my beautiful wife is here tonight, and she doesn't come to a lot of political events, but here she is. And believe it or not, her mom and grandma are visiting, and when they told us we were visiting, I said, you're coming to a political forum. So here they are from Colorado, my mother-in-law and my grandmother-in-law. So thank you all for being here. My name is Travis Dunlap. I'm delighted to be here tonight. I run on a platform of life, freedom, family, and opportunity. That platform hasn't changed from the time I was first running and elected in 2014. I've had the honor of serving District 10 over those years and fight for those principles. And so the ongoing discussion in the past weeks and months and really the past year and a half has been a discussion that sets a course for Oklahoma's future that is has some challenges but also opportunities, because every challenge has opportunity as well. And so I'm looking forward to the discussions tonight, and of course seeing so many familiar faces in the audience. It's nice to be back at Bartlesville High School and see so many of my friendly faces that I've met over the years here in Bartlesville. Thank you, H.J.
Very good. Next up is Michael McFarland. Mr. McFarland.
Hello. Okay. Hello, I'm Michael McFarland. I'm running for State Representative, District 10. I'm really happy to be here tonight. It's seen a lot of new faces out here. A few are familiar, but quite a few that I do know. I graduated from Pittsburgh State University recently, and I've always had a passion for politics, and I really wanted to jump into this race. And with the teacher walkout and everything going on, it seemed like a really good time. I'm a big supporter of education. I've always felt like it was underfunded, and I'm just really happy to be here.
Hello? Oh, okay. A little closer to my face. Anyway, I'm really happy to be here, and thank you for having me.
Next up is Mr. Kevin Stacy. Mr. Stacy.
We on? There you go. I probably don't even need the mic. Somebody out there said you have a teacher's voice, and that's because I've been in education 29 years. I seen my daughter just came in that's an educator at Adair, along with my granddaughter. Those are the two of the reasons that I threw my name in the hat, but I'm here seeking your vote for House District 10. As I stated, I've been an educator for 29 years, 24 years in the ag education field, 5 years in the superintendent position at Oklahoma Union, retiring this year at June 30th. Mr. McFarland said politics was his desire. I can't say that. You know, this is not something I decided to do till here recently, a little bit behind the eight ball as far as getting signs together. I just became frustrated with what I perceive as a lack of urgency in accomplishing goals and finding solutions for all Oklahomans, but especially House District 10 and its constituents. I look forward to visiting with you tonight.
Next up is Judd Strom. Mr. Strom?
Hello. I'm Judd Strom. I'd like to thank Peak for putting this on, and I'd especially like to thank them for inviting me to participate. Now, this is an education forum, and I am a Republican, and I am a conservative Republican. However, what I feel like is that all too long people have thought that conservatism and education should be at odds, and I don't feel like that's the case at all, and I'll tell you why. When the state of Oklahoma pulled education into its umbrella as a core function or a core service, at that moment the state became responsible for providing for all of the necessary functions of that core service. And I believe in providing for education, and I hope you do too. And I believe in public education in the state of Oklahoma, and I hope that you do too. Thank you.
Next is Mr. Darrell.
I want to thank you all for being here. My name is Darrell Fincher. There are a couple of things I would like you to know about me at the beginning. First is, if I don't answer any questions, I'm Googleable. My writing's back on the internet going back to the 1990s. The second thing to know about me is that I make decisions based on evidence, not based on...
I've had three careers. I'm a teacher, I'm an engineer, I'm a technologist. In my first career with 15 years, I was a field engineer in the oil fields. I worked all the way up and ended up heading up engineering projects, doing first in the world product development. Second one, teacher, working with middle school students, math and technology, became a district tech director. At the end of that, I ended up working with all the schools throughout the state. Through all that process, I ended up with a couple of degrees in education. One is a doctorate in education. I also have an advanced degree in mathematics. The reason I bring all that up is in my work with the schools for the past few years, one of the things that I did is I talked with them about their technology, worked with improving their technology and their connectivity, because that is the future for the schools. How do you connect to the future? In working with them and talking with superintendents, their prognosis went from gloomy to grim. And one of the things I discovered is I kept waiting for somebody to stand up with solutions that would fix this. But all the solutions were the same ones that we've seen before. And I kept waiting for somebody to step up. And I finally realized that somebody had to be me. So I'm standing up because Oklahoma's hurting, and I want to be able to help to make it better into the future. I'm here as a believer in a strong public education system, and we need one that's not only good for now, but will educate our grandchildren and their grandchildren. Thank you.
And next is Mr. Martin Garber. Mr. Garber?
Thank you, H.J., and thank you all for being here. First, I'd like to introduce my wife, Karen. Stand up, Karen. She was on the school board here for 4 years, and I drug her into it. We're lifelong Oklahomans, and we've been here 38 years. Came back from Washington, D.C. with Phillips Petroleum Company. I had a career of 35 years with Phillips. I ended up as manager of government relations, which I held that position for 27 years. As I'm a fiscal conservative, I first got into education in 1990 when Governor Bellman asked Pete Silas and I to help with 1017. Obviously, we were successful there. We were also successful bringing the business community together to oppose the repeal. After that, Governor Keating asked us to do 4x4. We worked on that. Here locally, I've been involved getting Jane Phillips School off that risk level. We raised $600,000 to do that with private money. And then we helped with the school overspending issue. Your board was nice enough to give me one of the red apples for that effort. And lately, I've been chairman of the Bartlesville Education Promise. Most of you probably know that program where we tutor after school today in all 9 schools, free for any kid that wants it. And then we also have an aggressive summer program, and we've hired 72 teachers to help us with those programs. We had 2,800 kids participate last year, and we were given the most outstanding school support program in the state of Oklahoma. We're very proud of that program, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it a little bit more. I would hope you vote for me, and thank you for asking me to be here.
Okay, you guys can take a breath now. You've done the hard part. You've talked about yourselves. All right, so here's how we're going to do this. I have a series of questions. We'll rotate the beginning slot. I'll not repeat the question, so I'll give it to you at the very beginning. If you need it repeated, please ask. I'll be more than happy to do that for you. But just so that we have enough time to move through the program, I hadn't really intended to repeat it after each speaker. Okay? So, Representative Dunlap, we're going to start with you on that end, and we'll work this way. So once the speaker next to you gets done, you may go ahead and start preparing for your answer. Does the state have a revenue shortage or a spending issue? If revenue shortage, what sources of revenue do you believe will be most effective in bringing in needed revenue to our state? If it's a spending issue, what should be curtailed? I'll read it once more. Does the state have a revenue shortage or a spending issue? If revenue shortage, what sources of revenue do you believe will be most effective in bringing in needed revenue to our state? If it's a spending issue, what should be curtailed?
Thank you for the question, H.J. This past week, a report came out that ranked the amount of taxes that Oklahomans pay of their income compared to other states. But it's not their income tax. It was all taxes and fees combined, how much of that income that Oklahomans make go to the state government. Well, we rank higher than Texas. We rank higher than Missouri. And so Oklahomans, as a total revenue collection policy, we are still a median tax state. And so that is something to consider at all times in tax policy discussions. We have seen in Oklahoma over the past year the most undertold success story in the midst of all of these discussions we've had is the revenue growth that we've had in Oklahoma. April collections came in at 114% of revenue expectations. Now, keep in mind, that number just refers to the general revenue account. The general revenue account only accounts for 43 to 46%, depending on the various factors, of your state budget. And so overall, that number is being reflected in all the revenue collections. We only spend in that general revenue collection 95%. And so there's a healthy cushion there because of all of the economic growth that was above the expectations. By the way, the expectations were to account that we were going to have at least some growth. So the growth was bigger than expected. Over on the year completely, we have 105% of our expectations for revenue. And so we have a really good success story to tell in Oklahoma. The economy is doing a good job. We have some opportunities. We just passed the largest tax increase in state history. And so I would say that right now we do not have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. We need to do what we can to reform our spending decisions in Oklahoma to reflect the priorities of our voters, which is the classroom. Thank you.
Yes.
believe that it is an issue with both, actually. I believe that we have a revenue problem because we keep giving tax cuts while we are not properly funding our core services. And I believe it is a spending problem because every time we do increase budget for core services like education, we shuffle the money away from it. And it goes to other things. Like right now we've been building a lot of parks, actually, in Oklahoma. And I think we need to shore up our core services before we focus on these other things.
Very good.
Well, I would agree with Mr. McFarland on that, that it's both. But I think it you can address both with one issue. I have been trying to find data, concrete data, on a tax rebate, tax incentive programs that shows for every dollar that we give what kind of reinvestment into the Oklahoma economy that we are getting. In my opinion, if we give a dollar away, we should be at least getting a dollar to a dollar 50 back, or that program is not viable. So if we could identify the data, put a commission together to get that data that we could see as constituents and see if that program is a net revenue increase to our economy, whether that's through job increases or through purchases through Oklahoma businesses, that would increase our revenue available plus decrease our spending, because that's a cost to our general revenue. I can just tell you that, Mr. Dunlap said that we have a viable general budget that's increased in revenue. Oklahoma Union, if that's the case, Oklahoma Union shouldn't be $1 million less in public education funds since 2008. And since 2008, we've increased our health care benefits by $120,000. So not only are we getting $1 million less for the same amount of students, I'm spending $120,000 what I get for health care cost. So if we've got an increase in revenue, then why are we not seeing that in our classrooms? Thank you.
I'll start with the spending issue. I've said from the beginning of this campaign, well, I've said long before my campaign, I'd argued that I don't feel like at Oklahoma City we have a problem. We don't face the problems we're being told we're being faced, that people are wasting way too much money. I think what's happening down at the city is you have a lot of very caring people in every different department that are doing everything they can to use those dollars in different ways to make sure that everybody that's under the care of some program or another gets the care they need or gets the service they need. And so while I hear quite often that we have a spending problem, I think we have a problem coming up with enough to spend on the things that need to be spent on. Now, as far as revenue goes, something I've always thought and something that's always worried me about the state of Oklahoma is Oklahoma had its boom days. We're a very young state, I mean, compared to most, and we had an oil boom. There was a time boom. There was a time in the South when every cow from here, from Kansas South, would come through the Tallgrass Prairie in Osage County and around here to spend some time and get bigger and go out. We all profited off that. We used to have a thriving coal industry in Oklahoma. We're down to one coal-producing state. On top of that, we used to have, being an oil state, we used to truck every bit of oil. Every little town in the state of Oklahoma had a little oil trucking service or a family that would do that. Those things are all gone. We've lost all of those industries to antiquity. And I'm glad to see now, and what I like to see coming on, is we've got to find ways to replace those. And with the wind energy coming on and solar coming on, and then now with internet technology and sales and replacing that sales tax for making sure that we collect that sales tax from things like Amazon, Etsy, Bass Pro and wherever, I think that we're going to see in the very near future a lot better revenue generation, and I think we'll be able to solve a lot of our spending problems very soon.
Thank you. Let's cut to the chase.
We have a group out there that claims that we have $500 million and all we can need to do is audit ourselves. You can't audit yourselves into prosperity. Any CPA will tell you that. We don't have $500 million of waste just floating around that will close up a gap. Yes, we can find some waste, fraud, and abuse, but we don't have $500 million. We do also have a revenue issue. We have been cutting our taxes and cutting our taxes and cutting our taxes. It's like when you get a great salary, oh, I think I will take less instead of putting some away for the rainy day. Then when we had the downturn, we ended up without enough revenue, which now leads to us correcting what our revenue is. So we do have a spending issue where we can get some efficiency out of the spending, but it's not going to be the $400 or $500 million people are talking about. We also have a revenue issue. One of the issue areas we can talk about is we can talk about capital gains. We can talk about the wind refund. That is a tremendous amount of money going to wind. We can also look at our credits that we use for the tax credits and make sure that the credits actually either achieve a policy purpose that we set up or that they pay for themselves. Thank you.
Well, I think we've got a problem both in revenue and spending. Revenue, obviously, we don't have enough. Spending, we don't have enough. I feel very bad that every time you pick up the paper, we're judged 49th or 50th and whatever it is. I think that's an embarrassment. So we need to be spending more. Revenue, the only way to do that is to raise more money. Now, I would tell you, I'm not a big tax person, but the one thing that my campaign is based upon is how do we grow Oklahoma? I serve on the Bartlesville Development Authority. I have for 5 or 6 years. I talk to businesses that are looking at Bartlesville, and it's sad that every time you start talking, the first thing they ask is, how's your education system? How's your health system? We've got to do better in all of these areas to attract new business. We have not really had a pro-growth attitude in this state for the last 4 years. That's sad in itself. We've got to attract more business to Oklahoma. And that with that will come more revenue with the tax system we already have in place. Then we'll be able to help education more, the health problems, the prison problems, the road problems, and every aspect of Oklahoma that some of us have grown to love. I would hope that if I get elected, we are going to work on some kind of a long-term plan to grow Oklahoma, and we'll have more money and all the state agencies and all the things that our public count on to live in this good state. Thank you.
Mr. McFarland, we'll start with you for the next question. And that question is, in late April, the state legislature voted to raise taxes and increase funding for education known as House Bill 1010XX. The taxes raised included a $1 per pack increase on cigarettes, 3 cents per gallon on gas, 6 cents on diesel, and a raising of the initial gross production tax paid on oil production from 2 to 5%. Additional revenue was raised by extending the collection of sales tax for online purchases and allowing for tribal casinos to offer ball and dice games like craps and roulette. From what you know about this legislation, do you favor or oppose it?
I definitely favor this legislation. I personally believed that the gross production tax should have been restored to its original 7%, and I would definitely have voted yes on this legislation. I also feel that the hotel hospitality thing should have been kept as well. And, thank you.
House Bill 1010 was a good start. I don't think it's a solution to the whole problem. Yes, it did raise some money this year that will be put into education. I do have some concerns about the reallocation of some of those fundings to health care and
other agencies and have concerns about where the replacement of that funds are going to be. It did nothing. You know, I would have supported it. If I had been the elected legislator on the floor at that time, I would have supported it. I don't think it's the end, though. It did nothing to help schools replace lost positions of staff. It did nothing to help schools replace outdated curriculum. It done nothing to help schools replace bus routes that they had consolidated. Until we can address the whole issue of getting schools back to where we were in 2008 and 2009 as far as per pupil spending, without this increase, we're still behind the eight ball in terms of education. Now, the salary schedule increase will help hopefully increase the pool of candidates we have for jobs. In 1985, when I got out of college, there were 70 applicants for every ag teaching position in Oklahoma. Today, we're lucky to get 5 to 6. Hopefully, we have one that's qualified. We tried to hire a third grade position last year. I had 2 applicants at Oklahoma Union. If you'd told me that I would be struggling to find applicants for elementary position at Oklahoma Union when I took that job, I would have said no way. Of those 2, not really qualified. So we chose to have larger classes with 2 good teachers versus hiring an unqualified teacher to add a position to reduce class numbers. That is unnecessary. That shouldn't happen. Hopefully this will improve the quality and the number of applicants we have for jobs.
I was glad to see 1010 pass. I was there for it. And it showed, one thing it showed was that 75% threshold that everyone thought was insurmountable. When the need came, we could beat, or you could be done. The other reason is, it was a series of, set of usury taxes and targeted taxes, and we were able to increase our general revenue in Oklahoma for use in education and a lot of our other services. It stayed away from the income tax, which is just a tax on every hardworking man and woman and would have affected you, every person in this room. It stayed away from the capital gains tax. And I really, in short, I was glad to see 1010 pass, and I hope it sticks.
I think we were all happy to see 1010 pass when it came through. I was in favor of it. It was not an ideal tax bill, but it's what you get. The good citizens of the state of Oklahoma decided when they passed SQ 640 that the minority would have outsized representation. That's just the nature of it, and people were able to come together on that. So, yes, it was a good tax. But we need to start looking at what's going to be happening later with our schools as we start looking at how do we raise revenue to fund our schools. We do know that if we look 20 years in the past, our schools 20 years in the future are not going to look anything like what we had 20 years in the past. What we need to do as we start working on those and looking at doing the funding for this is how do we work with the schools so they do provide our kids with the education that they need to take over those jobs that have not been invented yet so that they're able to be ready for the future that we can't envision. In short, it's going to take more of that. SQ 640 makes it much harder. It's time to look at SQ 640. Thank you.
I think there's probably only 2 people in this room that I know of that knew what the problems were with passage of 1010, and that's Representative Dunlap and Representative Sears. They were there on the front line. A big bill like that is very difficult and commendable to get it passed. The only problem is I would have done it a year earlier. They were 2 votes short of getting it done. They should have done it 2 years earlier, and then maybe all our teachers wouldn't have had to go to Oklahoma City. When that didn't happen, I did support them going. Karen and I even made contributions to the PEAK program for their transportation needs and for taking care of the kids here. Sometimes you've got to get their attention down there, and I can assure you our teachers did. 30,000 people on the door down there was not a fun deal for a week to 10 days. But It's needed because you all have seen what has happened with the increase in alternate certification, the amount of teachers leaving the state, and it's kind of sad to see in downtown Tulsa a major billboard advocating a move to Texas and you get $15,000 to $20,000 more. That's sad state, and shame on us as the public and not doing it sooner.
I'll try to fit all of this into 2 minutes. The process of politics is consensus building. State Question 640 was put into place to ensure that consensus was built when family budgets were required to give more of their money to the state government for the services. The 75% supermajority threshold was in place for emergencies, and I know that this was obviously used to get the tax bill to pass. But I favor sending the votes to the people, and I have 3 reasons for doing it. One is a politically philosophical reason in the fact that I believe in limited government, I believe in economic liberty, and therefore I know that the state government is rarely self-limiting, so taxpayers need that protection. Number 2, a principled reason, it's going to affect your family budget, and I want you to have a say in that. There's a sanctity that's there because the family is so important in our society. And then 3, it's a pragmatic reason. Again, politics is the process of building consensus. I didn't think that the consensus statewide had been built. Now we have a little bit of uncertainty because the veto referendum is in the air, working its way around the state. And so I would have much preferred sending the largest tax increase in state history to you all to approval. And that is one of the reasons I voted against it. I could talk about all of the individual provisions and how I think it created some economic anomalies that we didn't necessarily consider or that weren't fully thought out in terms of how effective those particular taxes were going to be in bringing in the revenue that we have already budgeted and spent for next year. So I hope that those revenues will be as we expect them to be, but we'll see. So thank you.
Mr. Stacy, we'll begin with you for the next question. And that question is, headed by former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn, a group of Oklahomans have announced they intend to collect signatures and run a campaign to repeal or undo House Bill 1010XX, which is the funding mechanism for the teacher pay raise. Will you vote to repeal that package or vote to let the package stay in place? And will you sign the petition? So let me repeat it one more. Headed by former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn, a group of Oklahomans have announced they intend to collect signatures and run a campaign to repeal or undo what we know as House Bill 1010XX, which is the funding mechanism for the teacher pay raise. Will you vote to repeal that package or vote to let the package stay in place, and will you sign the petition?
Well, to answer that question short and sweet is, no, I will not sign the petition, and no, I will not vote to repeal that question. Now, that group has every right, based on the Oklahoma Constitution, to gather those signatures and bring it to a vote of the people. As Mr. Garber said, I was a very young teacher when 1017 was passed, but that initiative went back to the vote of the people. So it'll be up to the people in this room. And I believe that Senator Coburn and his group will get the 41,000 signatures. I really believe that. So it'll be up to people in this room, educators and parents, to do a good job of educating their neighbors, their family, and making sure that we have the votes to defeat that proposal. There is some initiatives legally that's been challenging the legality of that petition at this moment. They're asking for the Attorney General's opinion to determine the legality of how the question is written. So how that plays out may also affect if it comes to a vote. People ask the legislators that the state question 6799 with the 1 cent sales tax went to the vote of the people a couple of years ago, and the rhetoric at that time coming from both constituents and the legislators was, let us do our job. Let the legislators do their job. That's what we heard. So the legislators did their job.
They listen to parents' phone calls. They listen to teachers. They listen to businesses. They listen to organizations like PEAK. And they passed a revenue measure to start the healing process in education. Now, we still got some more to do, as stated. Not only education, but health services and other areas of core service. But the answer is no, not signing the petition and not voting for doing away with that revenue package.
Again, I was down at the Capitol with a lot of you when 1010 passed. And I watched our duly elected senators and representatives debate, or fight really, on both sides, and acting as the people, as a representative government should, and for the people, those senators and representatives passed 1010. The people spoke loud and clear that day, and I hope that we're able to continue to act on their voices. I will not vote to repeal 1010. Thank you.
Thank you. I also would not vote to sign the petition or vote to repeal 1010. One of the issues that comes up out of that is, of course, that's every Oklahoman's right to try to get a petition and get it on there. However, what I would like them to see is they're claiming that there's extra money and to show out where the money's going, or show where the money's going to come from, because they haven't been able to do that. I think this is a way around it where they don't actually have to lay claim to any cuts that they would like to see, but they want to blame it on everybody else. As we move forward, we're going to get more of this. We have to remember, for a couple of reasons, that not only are we going to have these tax issues going up and the initiative of referendums, but there's also an attempt, as we talk about schools in general, for schools to be reformed and remade. There are tremendous pressures on schools that people are going to be trying to bring to bear because they want to change how schools operate. You've seen this. We'll be talking about it a little bit later in here. So as we work on this, no, we won't get it. If it does end up on the ballot, I will work to make sure that it comes down to a resounding defeat and not just a small defeat. Thank you.
I too will not sign that petition if it is around here. I understand some of the smoke shops are pursuing it. But it sounds like to me we're going to have another fight. They only need 41,000 signatures, which is not very many. Some of us worked pretty hard on defeating the repeal. Even our esteemed person over here, Mr. Reed, that's how he got into government relations. We drug him in from computing to help us go around the state and make presentations all over the state to defeat the repeal effort of 1017. I think all of us are going to have that fight if you like public education. However, there's two provisions there. It's not just the entire package of 500 and some million that would be repealed. There was one provision that was outside the repeal effort, and that had to do with the staff increase of $1,200. That would continue on. The schools would have to pay that, which is great. The staff needs the $1,200. It's a sad state, because they'll be cutting back $444 million if that is repealed. And then the schools will be the largest group that'll have to be cut back. We've seen cutbacks for four straight years across. I'm one that just doesn't want to have to move the chairs on the Titanic anymore. We've had enough of it.
Thank you for the question once again. I have a great amount of respect for the voter and a great amount of respect for the constitutional process we have in place. So because I've already had a chance to vote on it as a representative, I will not sign the petition. However, I did wish that the vote be approved by the people in the first place. And so I'm thinking that this will be on the ballot, and I will be looking forward to what the people have to say about it. Thank you for the question.
I will not vote to repeal 1010, and I would not sign the petition. I think that they do have the right to put it on there, and I think they should. I think it will end up on the ballot in November, but I think, judging by the support that the teachers were getting from their communities, I don't think it's going to succeed come November, and I'll be campaigning to make sure of that. Thank you.
Mr. Strom, we'll begin this question with you. The capital gains exemption became a major talking point at the end of this year's legislative session. It's been proposed that Oklahoma begin taxing capital gains, which is the profit made when selling off an investment like a home, a farm, or other businesses. What are your thoughts going forward on the capital gains exemption? Should there be modifications to the exemption currently in place? Let me repeat the question. The capital gains exemption became a major talking point at the end of this year's legislative session. It's been proposed that Oklahoma begin taxing capital gains, which is the profit made when selling off investments like a home, a farm, or other businesses. So give us your thoughts going forward on the capital gains exemption. Should there be modifications to the exemption currently in place?
I hope to see the deduction stay in place. I've said that all along. I've heard that it would only affect quite a few times just a few people, or just a few rich people, or just a few out-of-state real estate interests, when in reality, at the number of people that rely on that, when you look up the numbers, last in 2017, it would have been 117,000 people. Those were people's retirement plans. That was plans for the next generation. That was lifelong planning that we would take away right at the end if that property sold. I don't think that's fair. Also, I think, and I've discussed this at length with quite a few people, I think that we were calling it kind of a scared little beast the other day. That money is there because it's a safe bet to invest on. But if you take that deduction away, in a very short time, you'll see that money disappear. People reinvest it in other ways. People will quit buying property in Oklahoma to resell later. People will quit just investing in land in general in Oklahoma if there's not a reason to make money off of it there. I don't think it's a good source of income for the state, and I hope that the capital gains deduction remains in the state of Oklahoma. Thank you.
One of the reasons for tax credits, deductions, and everything else is you either have a policy objective that you need to go with it, or it's bringing in more money than it's going out. For the capital gains, I haven't quite figured out what the policy objective is for that. In that case, as I look at it, I'm inclined to go ahead and vote to repeal that capital gains. I know some people do depend on it, but it is a profit that they're making. We need to look at that and see how that works. Having said that, as I mentioned, I also make my decisions based on evidence. I'm digging down more into the capital gains so I can understand how it's totally effective. But right now, from where I stand, it looks like something that we do need to consider removing. Thank you.
This is a difficult issue. I know a little something about this issue because I hate to say it, I was involved in the first aspect of it. In 1991, Phillips, under my direction, we tried to change a major law in the state. We wanted to have anybody retiring be able to have a one-time 401k rollover, free rollover from state taxes. And we had practically every major working organization that had 401ks involved on our side. We got the bill through the Senate. The Speaker sent it to the Agriculture Committee. Obviously, when that happened, we knew we were in bad shape on our bill. But the farm guys were pretty smart. They saw what we were trying to do and decided they could do the same thing, and they did. this was an agriculture-based initiative because all of them, if they wanted to sell their farm, wanted a free tax haven for themselves. But in their defense, they also added any other asset. So if you own a home, if you own a small business, if you own any kind of agricultural property, you would and hold it for 5 years, you would be eligible to have this deduction and not have to pay taxes. The interesting thing about it is that they put it on an initiative petition with some smoke shop issues, and it passed. So to say the legislature can come in and just override it, they can't. It will have to go to the vote of a people. And I can tell you, it's not going to be an easy fight to get this thing repealed if that's what you want to do. But I'd look at your own situation. If you ever want to sell your house, and if it's gone up in value, I don't think you want to change it.
I oppose any modification to the exemption on the capital gains deduction tax. I do that because it was put into place by a vote of the people. It was people who realized that economic development was the answer to our state's solutions. So we want to make sure that we maintain a very positive investment community and opportunity palette in Oklahoma. We also want to acknowledge that capital gains are one of the best ways to build long-term family wealth. That's something we want in Oklahoma. We want to encourage that behavior. We want to see families grow their wealth in Oklahoma. And so we want to preserve that deduction so they feel like Oklahoma is a welcoming place in which they can plant their lives and see their wealth grow over time. And so I would oppose any effort to remove that exemption. It's something, keep in mind, we have to compete with states very close to us who either have no income tax or very low income taxes. And that's the environment we're in. And so any change that you're going to make to something like that, people are going to see those states very close to us, and they're going to consider whether Oklahoma is the best investment option for them. And so that always has to underlay our decisions and our discussions as a state on tax policy.
I do not believe that we should be making any tax exemptions or tax deductions until we have properly funded our core services. I believe that if we are going to give tax exemptions, that the tax exemptions need to go to the middle class and the working class because the money always flows up. And I feel that this legislation affects the top 3% of Oklahomans. Thank you.
I messed up. I turned my mic off. So that piece of legislation was pretty divisive amongst educators when we were at the Capitol. Some of them were in support of that legislation. Some of us were against that legislation. So that really tells you how contingent that could be to the state. As has been mentioned, and that was passed as a state question initiative, I believe in 2004, the people voted to put those guidelines in place. So asking the legislators or myself to override something the people had voted on at that time, I would probably have an issue with. I would not have an issue if that state question went back to the people and the people voted to change the way that's written or change the top tier or however that is. But it is something to look at. It is an alternative to increasing revenues available for all core services, but it will be a contentious item if discussed even at the Capitol or even amongst teachers and my staff at Oklahoma Union. So I can't form an opinion on that right at this time. I feel like I'm uneducated about the top tier and who that's going to affect. Without some exemptions to agriculture, it has been stated. I think just because a farmer sells $1 million worth of cattle doesn't mean he made $1 million. You know, I think we're going to be attacking some industries that look like they're wealthy, but when you take all things into consideration, they might have just broke even that year. Thank you.
Mr. Fincher, we'll begin with you. The path to success looks different for every student. More and more students are choosing not to attend college immediately after high school, and career tech programs are growing. Measures were passed this year which modify the math requirements for high school graduation by allowing successful completion of certain career tech programs. Do you support this change? Should it be expanded to other subjects besides math? So let me repeat it one more time. The path to success looks differently for every student. More and more students are choosing not to attend college immediately after high school, and career tech programs are growing. Measures were passed this year which modify the math requirements for high school graduation by allowing for successful completion of certain career tech programs. Do you support this change? And should it be implemented or should it be expanded to other subjects besides math?
Thank you for the question. I am a certified math teacher. I can teach all levels of mathematics in Oklahoma. So I fully support that new legislation on there. College is just one path to success. There are many paths to success in Oklahoma for students who get out, and college is just one path for somebody to become successful and to contribute to society. We have to remember that they should be able to contribute to society. The second thing, as a math teacher, I can tell you much of the math that we teach, while we love it, the students don't. Raise your hand if you ever factored a polynomial since you got out of class. 15 years as an engineer, I did a lot of calculations. I never factored a polynomial. What people need are math that can help them understand the world around them. We develop math to understand the world around us. That's what students need. They need to have that option. Yes, there are some others who need these very rigorous AP courses, the AP Calc AB and Calc BC courses that they have. So we need to continue going with those. But yes, this should also be looked at in other subjects. What will help people be successful? What speaks to the person? Part of the goal of school is for people to develop their identity as they learn. Learning is a means of identity. And this allows them to focus more on their learning rather than us focusing on our teaching. It's very important that we spend our time focusing on how students learn rather than on the teaching. As we move forward, this is going to become much more of an issue that we have to address as we start looking at what schools will become in the future. We got here from the committee of, if anybody understands history in schools, knows what happened in the 1890s. We're at another inflection point where things are changing. So, yes, it should be expanded to other subjects. Thank you.
As I mentioned, we worked hard with Governor Keating on 4x4 program. That basically, if you remember, we were hopeful that the schools would take up 4 years of math, 4 years of science, 4 years of English, and 4 years of social studies. That didn't happen. And a result, we've got what we've got today. I've just finished serving on the Tulsa Community College Board of Regents for 27 years. Governor Bellman appointed me, and three other governors re-upped me. One of the biggest problems we see at the community college, but also at the major four-year schools, is the number of students that come to college and cannot pass the entrance level test on math. Today in Oklahoma, it's about 75%. That means those students have to take remedial courses, and they don't get any credit for those remedial courses, and it costs money, them and their families, to be able to get ready for college. It's about 35% for English today also, so they've got to take remedial courses also. There is change going on. The colleges are working on, at least now you can take your remedial course at the same time you take your regular course, but then you're having to pay double. At least there is movement afoot to help. The real problem is the kids coming out of school need to have more math,
They need to have more English. And I think our academics need to be improved. I'm glad to hear that the VOTEC's doing it. The public schools need to do it also.
Thank you for the question. This idea, this proposal, I have no problem with this proposal. And I think it's probably a step in the right direction. We always, of course, needing to respond our public institutions to what's happening as the needs develop in the free market. And so this is something that we see as a need to create some flexibility, and that's fine doing it. But let me take the opportunity to talk to you about local control. The District 10, Oklahoma House District 10, has 9 school districts geographically located in the district. But if you look at the school district footprints, we send students to 19 different districts. Those 19 different districts all have a school board. That means there's over 100 school board members that serve District 10 constituents. I think those school board members are the people who need to set the graduation requirements based upon the needs that they see in their unique school districts. And so, yes, this change is probably a good change. The path to success for every student is different. I agree with that premise. But let's consider, do we need to be legislating that at the Oklahoma City House of Representatives, or do we need to be dealing with that with the over 100 school board members that serve the constituents of District 10? That's, I think, where the discussion needs to be.
I'm a huge supporter of this type of legislation. I believe that as the world changes with technology, I believe that our schools should too. And I think, technology is going to be the future of Oklahoma's economy. And I highly encourage that we continue offering programs like that. And I would go as far to say that I think we should also make one-year technology a requirement in our schools. As the workforce becomes more computerized, even job searching nowadays is mostly done on computers. And I feel like that's a very important thing that we should focus on. Thank you.
Well, public schools have had the ability to offer math credit for technology schools for years. A school board just has to approve that, and the curriculum that they're taking over there, they're allowed to count that as a math credit. I would approach it from a different standpoint. I would have no issues with exploring the possibility of course offers at Career Tech being counted for graduation at Oklahoma Union. But you know, 20 years ago, I've come from the agriculture education background, and Purcell, Oklahoma had an applied physics class. They put the lowest performing students in that applied physics class in the ag education program, and went through that program the whole year. At the end of the year, they all take that same test. Guess what students had the highest gain of all students at Purcell, Oklahoma, in physics on the state test? The ones in the applied physics class in the ag education department. So we can also look internally. We have programs in our schools that could also benefit from math credits. It always amazed me that ag education didn't have the ability to offer a math credit. As much math as we teach in our electricity class and our soil and water class, and to be on our soil and water team, the memorization of formulas, volume, area, soil equations that's necessary to be competitive in that contest is amazing. And if I would encourage you, ever get the opportunity to go sit in on an ag class that has that type of program, even a math teacher, it would amaze you at what we're doing there. So I would even expand that program, because things we're already doing in our schools could also be some opportunity to offer credit for math and science and things.
this question. I believe, ultimately, that we should see more local control over this subject. I trust Chuck McCauley and the Bartlesville School Board to make better decisions for Bartlesville than I trust anyone at Oklahoma City. I trust Nikki Hinkle and the Bowring School Board to make those decisions more so than I trust any person at Oklahoma City. Along the same lines, we used to have the opportunity, when I go to work every day and my father goes to work every day, we use skills that more so than we would have learned in advanced mathematics, we learned skills that we would have learned in shop and auto mechanics and our building classes and stuff, and a lot of those have disappeared. And it's just true that different kids want to learn and will benefit more from different classes than other kids. My sister could spend all day in a math book and love it. Best thing for a math book for me would be to tear out some pages and start a good campfire or something. You know, I was a science kid and a social studies and a civics kid. But I guess to end, that's what I believe as far as changing the math credits and changing what you need. I believe that a lot of that should go to local control. I think that there should be that way across the state. I think that kids that are at Bowring want to learn different things, and I don't want them to miss out on opportunities. But I want them to have those opportunities if they want them. So thank you.
Mr. Garber, the next question will be yours to start, and it is very simple. What's your stance on school vouchers and or education savings accounts? What's your stance on school vouchers and or education savings accounts?
I must tell you, I'm not a fan of either one of them. And I think vouchers go the wrong way. I'm so thankful we haven't moved that direction. We've got a great system here in Bartlesville, and I don't see taking money away from our public schools to move it to something else. Education savings plan is, I even had to ask just what that was when it came up on the priorities for discussion. Basically, that's allowing people to have a tax-free saving plan, and then they can move it to any school they want to, primarily private schools. I know that has been a top hot item. It was an expansion of that, and today you can do that to a degree. It's capped and at a couple of $1,000s per year. They wanted to expand it to this last session, and it was killed in committee. But I don't see that. I'm a public education fan. I went to a one-room schoolhouse, and then we moved to a big city, and I moved to a school where we had 1,000 students from one where we had 38. So I've seen all sides. But I do believe in public education. So I'm not in favor of vouchers, and I'm not in favor of savings plan that go to anything other than to public schools.
Thank you for the question. I support broad-based, family-centered, and family-driven, responsible school choice opportunities in Oklahoma. And I support them for several reasons. The number one indicator of student success in any environment is family involvement. I want to empower families in Oklahoma to use their money, it's their money, to make sure that their child gets the education that best meets their needs. Now, let me address how this would be really good for Oklahoma as a whole, because Oklahoma as a whole has, of course, a public education system, but because of our expanding economy, because of innovation in the world market, we have an exponentially increasing diversification of educational needs. That is not something that we can address with the systems we have in place. We need to unleash the potential of Oklahoma families and Oklahoma students instead of making them fit into a system that we currently have in place. It's about freedom, and it's about families making decisions. Now, the process of politics is consensus building.
I recognize that there's more work to be done in the area of building consensus around families, families having control over the tax dollars that they spend for education. So I will not be introducing legislation in this next legislative year, personally, but I will continue to ring the bell of educational choice and educational freedom, and I am wanting to be part of the team that builds the consensus around this issue, because it's something that Oklahoma families, I think, would really benefit from, and Oklahoma as a whole would be unleashed in its potential to participate in the world market. Thank you for the question.
I am not in support of either voucher. I am not in support of either vouchers or education savings accounts. I feel that our schools are a public good, and that everybody should contribute their fair share to them, even if they choose not to use them. I think this is better for the entire community, and I feel it should stay that way. Thank you.
This issue is not a new issue. It's been on the block for 2 or 3 or 4 years. It got pretty close to having a huge discussion at the Capitol 2 years ago. I've never really been in support of vouchers. Everybody has a choice now. If you live in Bartlesville and you want to send your school to Norwater, take them to Norwater. If you want to take them to Dewey, take them to Dewey. Osage Hills, if you want your child out of a larger school system, take them to Osage Hills. That's a parent's right, and they should have that right. The discussion I had with legislators at that time was, you know, I could maybe support your initiative if you're willing to put the additional funds necessary into the education funding formula where it wouldn't hurt my students at Oklahoma Union. I have students that live at Oklahoma Union. They have one choice of where to go to school. That's whatever bus comes by their house. They don't have the resources, not their fault. Their parents are not supportive. We talked about the ones that do good have parental support. That is true, Mr. Dunlap. They do have parental support. Everybody doesn't have that. So we have to have the opportunity for them to go to Oklahoma Union with as quality education as I can, get close to Bartlesville. Bartlesville is the premier education institution in this area. I agree with that. I cannot offer the things Bartlesville offers. Not going to be able to. And if you put money into vouchers program, that even reduces my ability at Oklahoma Union to offer the quality of education that my parents deserve and want. Thank you.
Well, it's a simple question, and I have a simple answer. I do not support vouchers for school. I feel like the damage done to the public school system is far greater than any benefit that the few kids would receive that use those vouchers. However, I do feel like that we do need to look at a tax-free savings account. I think a lot of parents are interested in that for college. I think they're interested in that for VOTEC, and sometimes they're interested for private school. I can't call myself a supporter, but I do think we need to look at those a little closer because I think they could be a benefit that wouldn't harm public school near as much. Thank you.
Vouchers don't work. From everything that we've seen, I've looked at a lot of reports on it. Vouchers don't end up with better results. In many cases, they actually end up with worse results and not the same results as in the school. Second thing is often those are unaccountable. The dollars just go away and they disappear. I'm not in favor of vouchers. Third, it leaves what are called stranded costs at the district. You take the money from the district, but the district still needs to be able to service all their buildings, all their teachers. They don't reduce their costs. So they have those stranded costs that are coming out because not all the costs don't just follow the student. It's like when your child goes off to college,
you still have to, it doesn't drop all your costs that you paid for the child there because you're still maintaining a room and everything else for them. So vouchers don't work. Education savings accounts, we already have some which are tax deferred. What we're talking about here are a special type that basically would take the money that was the state formula for the child, and based on your income, you get a percentage of it, and then you would just basically turn in bills that would pay for, like, curriculum, private schooling, whatever. I read Senate Bill 461. I was halfway through, and I'd already figured out two ways how, if I wanted to, I can make a pretty penny off of that. I know exactly what happens when there's state money to be handed out. I've seen it up close and personal. I've seen the investigations that happen. So I'm not in favor of those types of savings account where basically you take public funds and you allocate them to somebody else. I'm a believer in strong public schools. Public schools are accountable to the public. These other things are not accountable. Thank you.
Everybody looks so antsy here, the next set that we're going to go. So we're going to do something different. We decided we wanted to try to end tonight with something a little more lighthearted. You've heard all the answers for all the questions. Now we're going to turn this to actually find out a little bit more of how they think about different things. So we're going to play what I call Just Three Words. Just Three Words works like this. So I'm going to give you a word. You guys get to give me the three words that you think of. You have to use four, I understand. I wasn't a math major. So I'll give you the word, and each of you will then take a turn in responding. So, for example, if I gave you the word elections, you could come back to me with people making choices, voices being heard, deciding the future. Now, it's okay if the person next to you or down the road uses one of your words. And it's okay if you say, I can't come up with anything. All right? But the intent is for these folks to get a view inside of you as we talk about some of the key buzzwords for education. Deal? All right. Mr. Dunlap, we're going to start with you. We're going to come right down the row as we have with each of the questions. Just three words. Education.
The Great Liberator.
Learning about stuff.
A child's best chance.
Let's fund it.
Foundation of society.
Ask my wife.
All right, Mr. McFly, we're going to start with you for the next word. Ready? Education funding.
We need money.
Must be addressed.
Let's find it.
We need more.
I'll second that.
Combined with reform.
All right, Mr. Stacy, you ready? Teachers.
Best friends.
I love them.
They're all family.
Bottlesville has great ones.
The greatest builders.
My role models.
All let's see, where, Mr. Strom? Walkout.
Hopefully never again.
Good. Community supported it.
You got their attention.
Hijacked by the NEA.
Walking back in.
All right, Mr. Fincher.
One more.
Oh, up one more. Who did I skip? I'm sorry.
One word needed.
I apologize. I got off on my notes. All right. Now, Mr. Fincher, ready? Graduation.
It's done, finally.
Congratulations.
Prelude to a great beginning.
The start of something.
In my case this year, I graduated with my seniors.
Congratulations, seniors.
Mr. Garber, jobs.
That's the goal.
The way to grow.
Waking up early.
I told my daughter and son, get one.
We need more.
Small businesses, create them.
By down to the end, correct? Mr. Dunlap, Oklahoma.
The great launching pad.
My home forever.
That was really good, Mr. McFarland. Land of opportunity.
Probably the best state.
An unlimited future.
Great place to live.
So did you enjoy that? So I want to thank all the candidates for coming and appearing tonight. Again, I remind you the four candidates on your right are in House District 10. The two candidates on this side will be in House District 11. I'd also like to introduce two special guests that are here tonight. I think I found them. State Senator Julie Daniels and State Representative, soon to be term limited, and to leave us is Earl Sears sitting in the back. Would you please give them a warm thank you? I've lost her. Yeah. Oh. Senator Ford. Senator Ford is with us. It's better to be the has-been and never was. All right, some reminders. The last day to register to vote is June 1st. The deadline to request an absentee ballot is at 5 o'clock on June 20th. You can do early voting at your county election board on Thursday and Friday, June 21st and 22nd, from 8 to 6. Let me repeat that. You can do early voting at your county election board on Thursday and Friday, June 21st and 22nd, from 8 to 6. And starting this year, you can vote on Saturday from 9 to 2 at your county election board. So if you can't vote on June 26th, you can vote on June 21st and June 22nd from 8 to 6, and Saturday, June 23rd, from 9 to 2 at your county election board. The primary is June 26th. We're going to ask the candidates if they'll return back to their tables in the lobby area by their campaign tables. So if you would like to stop and visit or ask them a question that maybe we didn't get to tonight, they'll be here. I want to thank the Bartlesville Public Schools, Chuck, Scott, for the allowing us to host this education forum. I really want to thank you. It is so nice to get to come back home and see the attention and the respect shown the candidates. You've done an excellent job. This concludes our program for this evening. Drive safe. God bless. And thank you all.
Thank you very much for tuning in to K1 AM 1400 and FM 93.3's coverage of today's public education forum at the Bartlesville High School Fine Arts Center. Once again, thank you to all of our wonderful candidates, Martin Garber, Daryl Fincher, Judd Strom, Kevin Stacy, Michael McFarland, and Travis Dunlap. Tonight's forum is being brought to you by Phillips 66. Special thanks to Dave Waddell back in the studio. We'll throw it back to you, Dave. K1's regular scheduled programming is on the way.
For residential and commercial plumbing, call Mason's Plumbing, where serving you is their priority. This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM K227 CQ Bartlesville.
At Phillips 66, we think pride.